Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
So happy to be kicking off this week with you on CBD. Jim Donovan is filling in today for Nathan Zagora, and will also do so tomorrow. Lots of good stuff today. Tom Withers from the Associated Press is going to stop by at 1:30. We're going to have some sound from Steve Mariucci of NFL Network, former NFL coach. A little advice for Johnny Football from the Mooch. And then we want to do Ask the Experts. So tweet NFL and Browns questions to @Browns_daily for yours truly and Jim Donovan. We'll be happy to do that for you. We're going to have some sound bites from throughout the league. It is a Monday, so that is our three topics today with three-time Super Bowl champion Gerard Cherry here on the show, an exclusive feature. Our Ohio Business Machines hot topics of the day. Before I get to those, hello, Jim Donovan.
Hello, Vic. Have not seen you in a while. Have listened to you.
Yeah.
Have talked to you, but have not seen you in person. Good to be with you. Good to be with you the next couple of days.
It's great to be around you as well. And of course, these next few days, and that leads off our topics, Jim. It's minicamp week.
It is minicamp,
right?
Yeah.
Mandatory minicamp, wrapping up the off-season workouts. So tomorrow and Wednesday, Thursday, and how these will differ from the OTAs and I guess from the rookie minicamp is that they're going to be open the whole. You're going to have multiple days of open to the media time, so a broader glimpse of what this team I guess is going to look like before things get shut down for training camp. My question to you, and we want to pose the same question to people out there who want to dial us up at 216-578-0850 and tweet us at @Browns_daily. What are you excited to see? Who are you excited to see this week?
Well, I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see quarterbacks with receivers. Okay. That's what I'm excited to see. I don't think you get a real good visual on, well, the defensive line, maybe the linebackers in coverage, but certainly pass rush, running game. I don't think you get to see that in minicamp until they put the pads on, until they start hitting, because they're not hitting. I mean, you know, they're running through alleys. I'm excited to see because I'm a little concerned about the wide receiver range.
Sure.
And, you know, we're not going to see Burleson out on the field yet, so he's not going to be there. I don't know how much we're going to see Miles Austin. I know we saw a little bit of him last week in individual drills, and I'll take these guys at their word, Vic, that they will be ready to go come the start of training camp, and that's when, you know, we'll get a more complete picture. So I'm excited to see the cohesiveness, some kind of rhythm between quarterbacks and receivers, and really excited to see, like, a guy like Jordan Cameron continue to become, you know, one with whichever quarterback is throwing them the football, because I think the possibility is there for the tight end to have a huge year, not only because of who he is,
right,
but because of the offense that he's going to be playing in.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. The question marks at receiver have left us with the most questions about this whole offseason, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we can say, of course, the quarterback question is the biggest question of all.
Right.
But honestly, I think there's you're going to see that sort itself out one way or another. You know a little bit about what Brian Hoyer is. We're going to learn a lot more about what Johnny Manziel is and how soon he's ready to get out there. But I think both of those points are moot until we really know who's catching passes, who's the number one, who's number two, and how do all the parts work in between? There are, to me, too many key people in this conversation with huge question marks. It starts with, obviously, Josh Gordon.
Yeah.
But what will Miles Austin be all about, and when does he get out there?
Right.
What will Nate Burleson be all about, and when does he get out there? I know he's saying fully for training camp and so forth, but I don't think there's anything we can glean from these past few weeks that tells us how much closer any of these guys is to being out there and being a factor.
I think the kid that I think everybody should be excited about is the kid Hawkins. I mean, he's out there.
Yeah.
He knows his role. He's very happy to be here. He certainly knows the division. He's saying all the right stuff. And I think he's excited. I think they're excited to have him. So that's the fixture, at least in the passing game. And then the tight end picture. The other thing, Vic, is that you always wonder about some of these kids that they've brought in as undrafted free agents, because they went right out and they got undrafted free agents.
Right.
You know, as soon as the draft was concluded at wide receiver, you know, a lot of times these guys make a team. I mean, a lot of times someone catches fire, and there's always the story about a guy that suddenly makes it in the NFL, and they'll say, remember now, he was an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
And typically it happens more at wide receiver, I think, than it happens at any other position.
Oh, for sure.
So I wonder if they have somebody there, a little lightning in the bottle, that would come out and get the opportunity in training camp and in the four preseason games to show himself, and he makes the team, and suddenly you're sitting and saying, wow, we didn't know that we had this.
Well, I think they have some idea. Certainly Kyle Shanahan does with Anthony Armstrong, right? He had him for a couple of years in Washington, but Anthony would qualify as a fringe guy.
Sure.
He would qualify as a guy who spent a couple of years in not even the real Arena League, but like the faux Arena League, whatever that was, for a couple of seasons, got into the NFL, got a chance with Miami, has bounced around a little bit with different rosters, and again, had the most traction in those 2 years with the Redskins, so he knows the Shanahan system. That's one thing he has going for him. Another thing is, at 31, I think he runs pretty well. Another thing is, seems to catch the ball pretty well. Earl Bennett seems to be a competent guy, but we got to have more than competence, obviously, at this position. And as you said, the only guy that generates any level of excitement is Andrew Hawkins, but he's so darn small. I mean, I'd love to see him be the Wes Welker of this football team, but that's asking a lot to be that prolific and proficient. I don't see this offense, Jim, feeding any single receiver, least of all a slot guy, that much.
I really think the tight end is going to become huge in the offense.
Oh, it has to be.
I think the tight end is going to become huge in the offense. And I think the whole goal, if I get it right, Vic, the whole goal might be this, that they run the ball effectively, that they bootleg the ball out, that they slip it to the tight end a great deal, that all of a sudden that safety's got to come down and play the run, and then really your receivers, whether they're first, second, sixth, seventh, or undrafted free agents, you know, whatever round they've been drafted in, suddenly they're going to look better because you're going to draw less coverage from everybody because you're going to have to honor the run a little bit more. You're going to have to play those tight ends.
For sure. And I think we've got some evidence there, and that would stand out. Nathan and I did this last week where we did our superlatives from the OTAs, and I think it was obvious on everyone's list that Terrence West has been a standout. He's been a guy that you can't take your eyes off of because of how he runs, how explosive he is. As I said, I sort of am measured in my analysis of what a running back does in OTAs, just as you said on the defensive guys, because we want to see the collision. We want to see how he responds after collision. We want to see how hard he hits it up into the hole when he's hitting it up in the hole when people are hitting back. Nobody's hitting back right
now.
That's right. But he looks like – he looks the part, Jim. He really looks the part, and he gives the – I think I'm more confident. I'm good with seeing Ben Tate, and I think there's been a perception that, well, the more you talk up Terrence West, you're kind of maybe talking down or forgetting about Tate. That's not true at all. Tate has been solid, has been impressive, has done some exceptional things at times. I'm excited because I don't think you have a legitimate running game in this league if you can't have a conversation about two guys.
Oh, absolutely.
And, of course, last year we had a conversation about no guys.
No guys. Here's the thing, too, Vic. You know, Ben Tate knows the drill here, okay?
Yeah.
He signed here. He thinks it's his running game. He thinks basically the running game will start with him.
Sure.
Okay. But he also knows this happened to him before. It happened to him in Houston. He thought it was his running game there. And then all of a sudden this guy, Arian Foster, comes in, and it's not his running
game
anymore.
Changes everything.
All right, so he knows that.
Yeah.
Now you got the kid West comes in. I mean, what a story. You know, the kid is working in a shoe store.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's out of the game. He's sort of in the game. He's in a small college situation. He's racking up big numbers. So he's got everything to play for. And now you got Ben Tate that realizes, hey, listen, I can't rest on my laurels here just because this guy came from Towson.
Yeah.
All right? I'm going to really have to play through this thing. So I think you got a good situation there. Plus, you got, you know, you have other guys in there too. You know, now you got true fullbacks. You know, you have another running back that can really catch the ball out of the backfield. Hopefully he's going to be okay, you know, in Deion Lewis. And I think then now you have three guys that – let's talk about those three. I think you have three guys that understand their mission. West realizes, boy, he come a long way to get into the NFL. The team seems to really have found him. Other teams liked him, the Ravens being one of them. You have Ben Tate that, you know, maybe says, all right, I finally got away from the shadow of Arian Foster. Now I'm going to show them what they were missing when they kind of – backplayed me and played him in front of me. I think you got a pretty lively situation in that backfield.
No, I think
but you're right, Vic. It's not going to be one that we're really going to visually see until training camp and those games.
And that's when you really reserve judgment. I go in with a high level of optimism. I go in believing there's a running game there, but I absolutely need to see much more in the way of the physicality of it all to go to a place of full confidence. Getting this thing started on a football Monday here on CBD, Ohio Business Machines Hot Topics. You know, as we mentioned, Mike Pettine, the head coach of the Browns, and what this week is going to look like for him, he told reporters over the weekend that the team was approached. Now, this was before the drafting of Johnny Manziel. I know you know the story. By HBO to appear on Hard Knocks this fall, but that the team declined. Would you have wanted to see the Browns on Hard Knocks? Good decision or bad decision? Keeping in mind there had been a loose policy that a first-year coach of a team or a team with a first-year coach wasn't on the list of qualifications to make it to Hard Knocks, but I guess they would have made exceptions if a first-year coach said, hey, put us on here. But he refused it. And what do you think? Good idea?
Well, number one, I wonder if they kind of went to him because he had been on Hard Knocks, you know, as a Jets defensive coordinator. And
he was one of the stars.
I was just going to say, I watched the rerun of that.
Yeah.
You know, the NFL Network's been playing them back.
How to live, Jim. You know how to live.
I'm telling you, Mike Pettine was a big, big star in that. His personality was definitely what we're seeing. So I wonder maybe if because he had been through it and you know, had lived it, if they were more open-minded to a first-year head coach that way. I would have loved to have seen them on it.
Yeah,
I really would have for the entertainment value of it. But I understand where they're coming from. They got a lot of work to get done.
Yeah.
Mike said even with that Jets team, and of course they went through the teeth of the Darrell Revis holdout.
Oh, yeah.
That was the whole summer.
Yeah.
Okay. That it was a problem. I mean, it was a distraction. He always was wearing a microphone.
For sure.
You know, he said, you know, I think he was very sensitive to the cutting of a player, you know, when they have to do that and how that's showed and filmed. I would have loved to have seen it. But from entertainment, I'm telling you, I think it would have been the biggest rated, highest rated Hard Knocks ever.
I'm going to admit to you, as you admitted just now, that when there's a Hard Knocks marathon on NFL Network, I'm in front of that TV, baby.
Yeah.
Because I know how to have fun. And that's – no, it's –
Now, wasn't Ray part of the one that was in Kansas City?
Yeah, Ray Farmer.
Okay, because that was Carl Peterson and it was Herman Edwards.
Yes, and that too had its. I think it was Boomer Grigson. Remember the fullback?
And right. They had the holdout with Dwayne Bowe.
They went through that thing.
Right.
You know, I talked with Mike about this last week. Mike Pettine about this last week, about the Hard Knocks, and recalling it because again they had shown that Jets won a zillion times on NFL Network, and he was saying, you know, we had like final edit rights over things, and he was curious as to why Mike Tannenbaum, the general manager, subjected himself to being seen trying to field the balls that were kicked or launched high in the air by the jugs machine and then dropping those and looking pretty silly and then falling on the ground. And he was kind of saying, geez, Mike, you know, you kind of got to like use your editing power there. But if there would be one coach, especially a first-year head coach, who I think would handle it, it would be Pettine. I think he's got a feel for it, and a couple of reasons. Number one, we saw how he handled it. Now, he wasn't the head coach, but he was the defensive coordinator and a very prominent voice in the previous one.
Yes.
He gets the drill on knowing where the cameras are, which are ultra-intrusive, are everywhere, and I think he gets a feel for that. The other thing is he had a writer, not he, but the Jets had the writer, the author of the book Collisions Low Crossers, that was all about the inside look at the Jets, embedded in the Jets facility. And I think that, I mean, they literally set this guy up with a with an office in the Jets Florham Park, New Jersey facility. And I guess where this writer's office was amidst the coaching staff, he was Pettine was like right nearby, and they became close.
Yeah.
And Pettine became kind of a force or a factor in that story. He is, because you hear him mentioned through or read about him being mentioned throughout. And so I get the feeling he trusts his ability to manage that. But I think everything does change with Johnny Manziel being here. I think everything changes with a young team that's still kind of trying to find its way. And you've got enough issues and enough obstacles to overcome that if you add this to the mix and it becomes a reason that you don't succeed, then your decision-making is now questioned. Like, why would you have invited those cameras here?
Absolutely. One more thing. I think, wasn't Mike part of a documentary on ESPN when he was a high school coach?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
With his dad. Yeah.
So he's used to this stuff.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there were cameras in his home. I remember, you know, stuff like that. And you're right. Now, this team is dealing with huge issues right now that are right on their lap. Issues that they could not plan for in January, February, or March, because until they drafted these players, and one player in particular, you know, in late April, I mean, you know, or May, actually. I mean, that's, you know, now suddenly it's on them. How do you handle training camp? How do you handle big crowds at training camp?
Right.
How do you handle big crowds at training camp with not exactly a huge place here?
Yeah.
You know, this
is compelling TV, though. I mean, it would be from our, let's remove ourselves from the Browns for a moment.
I'm watching it.
We're all in.
Absolutely.
You're watching it. You'd produce it.
I'm waiting for the next episode. Yeah, I'm saying, did you see last episode?
Oh, my God.
I'm watching it a second time. Absolutely, because I think there are going to be great storylines.
I think there'll be incredible storylines. All right, we'll have a few storylines of our own in the course of these 2 hours.
Vic, are we going to have to battle the Padres now to get this kid signed?
Could be a battle. We're going to have to get into that. The San Diego Padres drafting Johnny Manziel in the entry draft of Major League Baseball, so that officially happened. That really did happen.
He's
so,
a shortstop, I heard.
He was an outstanding ball player as a kid. I mean, yeah. I know he loved baseball as a kid. And
I heard he was a pretty good hitter. He hit 400 or something?
Oh, yeah. No, very much a baseball savvy.
I mean, there's Ted Williams, and then there's
Johnny Manziel.
Ted Williams hit 406.
He can do both, right? They can do both in this league.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I was thinking about
Browns
guys
didn't love that I just said that, but they can do both.
As a matter of fact, no, they don't. I just saw them go by the window here, Vic, and they're going, don't say that. Don't give him any ideas.
Oh, shoot, they're sending up security.
I mean, remember all the guys that have done it, tried to do it. Didn't the kid from Michigan, the quarterback, Drew Henson? Didn't he try
to do it? No, but we go back to, again, the most famous, Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson, but of other ones in between.
Yeah,
remember
when Sanders was playing
McGee
for the
– on this current
Remember
roster.
When he was playing for the Falcons in the afternoon
and then flew
to the Braves World Series game, didn't he, or something?
One of those things from Star Trek, right? Then they materialize them. Beamed them up. All right, Tom Withers at 1:30. Your calls, 216-578-0850. Weigh in on a bunch of these topics. We want to hear about this. And also, Johnny was on that inflatable swan. I know you've got one of those, too. I got one in my
pool. The funny thing is, I do.
Yes. And what will he do with 6 weeks off? Huh? A lot of swans to write. All right, come on back with us. CBD just getting it started on a Monday. Just hold on.